Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program of news and feature stories is designed for people learning English. Today, we will hear a science report from Alice Bryant, and Phil Dierking has news about the Nobel Prize. As always, we will close the show with an American story. But first, the most famous horse races in America begin on May 5th with the running of the 144th Kentucky Derby. It is the first of a three-part championship series. The other two races are the Preakness in Maryland and the Belmont Stakes in New York. Win all three races, and your horse is named a Triple Crown champion. It does not happen often. Only 12 horses have won the Triple Crown of Thoroughbred racing. The first was Sir Barton in 1919. The most recent, almost 100 years later, was 2015 champion American Pharaoh. The Kentucky Derby in the southern city of Louisville is the youngest of the three races. It is arguably the most famous horse race in the world. It is often called the most exciting 2 minutes in sports. Millions of dollars are wagered on the Derby, and great wealth can be gained from breeding Derby winners. Kentucky Derby competitors are 3 years old. They run for 2 kilometers around the Churchill Downs racetrack in Louisville. Derby runners can be male or female horses. Only males have ever won so far. The famous Triple Crown winner, Secretariat, finished the Kentucky Derby faster than any horse before or after him. His time in the 1973 race was 1 minute 59.4 seconds. Only one other competitor has run the Derby in under 2 minutes. That horse, Monarcos, won the race in 2001, but he did not break Secretariat's record. Horse lovers, gamblers, the rich and the famous gather at Churchill Downs for the Kentucky Derby. It is as much a cultural celebration as it is a sporting event. And that celebration requires some preparation on the part of those attending. The Kentucky Derby is outside. The race can get very dirty, with the horses kicking up mud and dust as they speed around the track. But observers are expected to look their best. Many men wear suits. Many women wear beautiful spring dresses. However, the critical piece of clothing goes on top of your head. Hats are almost a requirement at the Kentucky Derby. They come in all sizes, shapes, and colors at the race. Women's hat styles vary greatly. They can include flowers, feathers, ribbons, jewels, and more. You might even see a hat or two larger than the heads they top. The owners of the winning horse receive more than $1 million. More importantly, people will pay a lot of money to breed their horses with a Kentucky Derby winner. And the horse? It gets flowers. As soon as the race is over, a spread of red roses is hung over the winning animal's neck. The tradition began in 1896. The red rose became the official Derby flower in 1904. And about 20 years after that, the Kentucky Derby came to be known as the Run for the Roses. Kentucky is famous for making the alcohol called bourbon. And Kentucky bourbon is the base of a famous Derby drink, the mint julep. It is served in a metal container to keep it very cold. It contains bourbon, sugar, mint leaves, and ice. The Kentucky Derby's official website says more than 120,000 mint juleps will be sold at Churchill Downs during the Derby weekend.
The Nobel Prize in Literature will not be awarded this year after accusations of wrongdoing against the Swedish Academy. The organization chooses the winner. The Swedish Academy said Friday that the 2018 prize will be given in 2019. Members made the decision at a weekly meeting in Stockholm a day earlier. Anders Olsson, the Academy's permanent secretary, said the group needed time to rebuild public trust before choosing the next laureate. He said the Academy made the decision, in his words, out of respect for previous and future literature laureates, the Nobel Foundation, and the general public. Nobel Prizes are awarded in science, medicine, literature, and peacemaking. Swedish inventor Alfred Nobel provided money for their establishment after his death. This will be the first time since 1949 that the award has been delayed. Last year, Japanese-born British novelist Kazuo Ishiguro won the prize. The problems at the Swedish Academy began last fall. Jean-Claude Arnault, an important artist in Sweden, was accused of sexual abuse. Arnault leads a cultural center for which the Academy provided financial support. He is also the husband of Academy member, poet Katarina Frostenson. In November of 2016, a major Swedish newspaper, Dagens Nyheter, reported about 18 women who accused Arnault of sex abuse. He has also been accused of violating Nobel secrecy rules. He reportedly released the identity of winners before official announcements at least 7 times. Arnault's lawyer, Bjorn Hurtig, has denied the accusations. He told the Associated Press that Arnault is the victim of a witch hunt and that the accusations may only have the purpose of harming him. The Academy later admitted in a report that unacceptable behavior in the form of unwanted intimacy took place among its members. However, its poor management of the behavior damaged the organization's trustworthiness. It also led to the resignation of its first female leader, Sara Danius. A debate about how to deal with the accusations divided the Academy's 18 members, who are appointed to life terms. Later, 7 members decided to leave or distance themselves from the group. The Academy released a statement that said members would re-examine operating policies at this week's meeting. The Nobel Foundation quickly answered, saying it believes the Academy will put all its efforts into rebuilding its trustworthiness. Carl Henrik Heldin, chairman of the Nobel Foundation Board, said in a statement that he also believes the Academy members realize their changes need to include greater openness toward the outside world. The Nobel Prize has been suspended 49 times since the prizes began in 1901, usually the result of war. Swedish Academy member Göran Malmqvist told Sweden's TT news agency that the delay was a really good decision. "We're in a crisis and it will take time to rebuild again," he said. He added that the Academy must be more open to the media, but at the same time not leak the name of the winner. I'm Phil Dierking.
Scientists are shocked at the speed at which resistance to powerful antibiotics spreads from animals to people. New research has shown that genetic changes in pathogens affect people and animals around the world in just a few years. The research suggests these genetic changes probably spread from a pig farm in China. Professor Francois Ballou is the lead researcher for the study and director of the Genetics Institute at University College London. He says the powerful antibiotic colistin has become an important last line of defense. It is used to save people's lives when all other drugs have failed.
And it was mostly used in agriculture, then in pigs and a bit in chicken. But recently, as we're running out of drugs, people actually have become more interested again in using it. And it's been used quite extensively recently over the last 5-10 years in the clinic.
Now, even colistin is losing its power against highly resistant bacteria called superbugs. Deadly pathogens like E. coli or Salmonella can change and develop resistance to antibiotics. Ballou's research identifies the speed at which the gene that gives resistance to colistin began in the mid-2000s.
It happened once, and it jumped very, very likely from pigs, probably in China, and it spread extremely rapidly throughout the world. And it also spread in all sorts of different species and affect humans.
This resistance has even been found in pathogens in seawater on Brazilian beaches. Ballou notes his study centered on just one resistant gene, but many pathogens are developing other forms of resistance. Sally Davies is Britain's chief medical officer. She warned recently that antimicrobial resistance could lead to the end of modern medicine. Last October, she spoke to delegates at a conference on antimicrobial resistance in Germany. She told them that common operations, such as cesarean sections, would become dangerous without working antibiotics.
Those would become much more risky if we did not have effective antibiotics. Superbugs kill, and they're on the rise.
Scientists are working on improving existing drugs like colistin to give them added power against resistant pathogens. In the longer term, researchers say more investment is needed in developing new drugs. They also say there is a need to rethink how antibiotics are used in agriculture and at clinics. I'm Alice Bryant.
I spoke until I was 7 and a half, and then at 7 and a half, I was raped. And the man, I told the name of the rapist to my family. He was put in jail. He was out the next day. And the next day, he was found dead. And I thought that my voice had killed him. So I stopped speaking for almost 6 years. I had voice, but I simply refused to use it.
That voice belonged to Maya Angelou, the former poet, novelist, teacher, actor, and dancer. She is the subject this week on What It Takes, a podcast from the American Academy of Achievement. To listen to more of Maya Angelou, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Now it is time for an American story. Today we hear The Boarded Window by Ambrose Bierce.
In 1830, only a few miles away from what is now the great city of Cincinnati, Ohio, lay a huge and almost endless forest. The area had a few settlements established by people of the frontier. Many of them had already left the area for settlements further to the west, but among those remaining was a man who had been one of the first people to arrive there. He lived alone in a house of logs, surrounded on all sides by the great forest. He seemed a part of the darkness and silence of the forest, for no one had ever known him to smile or speak an unnecessary word. His simple needs were supplied by selling or trading the skins of wild animals in the town. His little log house had a single door. Directly opposite was a window. The window was boarded up. No one could remember a time when it was not. And no one knew why it had been closed. It surely was not because of the man's dislike of light and air. Sometimes he could be seen lying in the sun on his doorstep. I imagine there are few people living today who ever knew the secret of that window. But I am one, as you shall see. The man's name was said to be Murlock. He appeared to be 70 years old, but he was really 50. Something other than years had been the cause of his aging. His hair and long, full beard were white. His gray, lifeless eyes were sunken. His face was wrinkled. He was tall and thin, with drooping shoulders, like someone with many problems. I never saw him. These details I learned from my grandfather. He told me the man's story when I was a boy. He had known him when living nearby in that early day. One day, Murlock was found in his cabin, dead. It was not a time and place for medical examiners and newspapers. I suppose it was agreed that he had died from natural causes, or I should have been told and should remember. I know only that the body was buried near the cabin, next to the burial place of his wife. She had died so many years before him that local tradition noted very little of her existence. That closes the final part of this true story. Except for the incident that followed many years later. With a fearless spirit, I went to the place and got close enough to the ruined cabin to throw a stone against it. I ran away to avoid the ghost which every well-informed boy in the area knew haunted the spot. But there is an earlier part to this story. supplied by my grandfather. When Murlock built his cabin, he was young, strong, and full of hope. He began the hard work of creating a farm. He kept a gun, a rifle, for hunting to support himself. He had married a young woman in all ways worthy of his honest love and loyalty. She shared the dangers of life with a willing spirit and a light heart. There is no known record of her name or details about her. They loved each other and were happy. One day, Murlock returned from hunting in a deep part of the forest. He found his wife sick with fever and confusion. There was no doctor or neighbor within miles. She was in no condition to be left alone while he went to find help. So Murlock tried to take care of his wife and return her to good health. But at the end of the third day, she fell into unconsciousness and died. From what we know about a man like Murlock, we may try to imagine some of the details of the story told by my grandfather. When he was sure she was dead, Murlock had sense enough to remember that the dead must be prepared for burial. He made a mistake now and again while performing this special duty. He did certain things wrong, and others which he did correctly were done over and over again. He was surprised that he did not cry, surprised and a little ashamed. Surely it is unkind not to cry for the dead. "Tomorrow," he said out loud, "I shall have to make the coffin and dig the grave, and then I shall miss her when she is no longer in sight. But now, she is dead, of course. But it is all right. It must be all right somehow. Things cannot be as bad as they seem." He stood over the body of his wife in the disappearing light. He fixed the hair and made finishing touches to the rest. He did all of this without thinking, but with care. And still through his mind ran a feeling that all was right, that he should have her again as before, and everything would be explained. Murlock had no experience in deep sadness. His heart could not contain it all. His imagination could not understand it. He did not know he was so hard struck. That knowledge would come later and never leave. Deep sadness is an artist of powers that affects people in different ways. To one, it comes like the stroke of an arrow, shocking all the emotions to a sharper life. To another, it comes as the blow of a crushing strike. We may believe Murlock to have been affected that way. Soon after he had finished his work, he sank into a chair by the side of the table upon which the body lay. He noted how white his wife's face looked in the deepening darkness. He laid his arms upon the table's edge and dropped his face into them, tearless and very sleepy. At that moment, a long screaming sound came in through the open window. It was like the cry of a lost child in the far deep of the darkening forest, but the man did not move. He heard that unearthly cry upon his failing sense, again and nearer than before. Maybe it was a wild animal, or maybe it was a dream. For Murlock was asleep. Some hours later, he awoke, lifted his head from his arms, and listened closely. He knew not why. There, in the black darkness by the side of the body, he remembered everything without a shock. He strained his eyes to see he knew not what. His senses were all alert. His breath was suspended. His blood was still as if to assist the silence. Who, what had awakened him, and where was it? Suddenly the table shook under his arms. At the same time he heard, or imagined he heard, a light, soft step, and then another. The sounds were as bare feet walking upon the floor. He was afraid beyond the power to cry out or move. He waited, waited, there in the darkness, through what seemed like centuries of such fear. Fear as one may know, but yet live to tell. He tried, but failed to speak the dead woman's name. He tried, but failed to stretch his hand across the table to learn if she was there. His throat was powerless. His arms and hands were like lead. Then something most frightful happened. It seemed as if a heavy body was thrown against the table with a force that pushed against his chest. At the same time, he heard and felt the fall of something upon the floor. It was so violent a crash that the whole house shook. A fight followed, and a confusion of sounds impossible to describe. Murlock had risen to his feet. Extreme fear had caused him to lose control of his senses. He threw his hands upon the table. Nothing was there. There is a point at which fear may turn to insanity, and insanity incites to action. With no definite plan and acting like a madman, Murlock ran quickly to the wall. He seized his loaded rifle and, without aim, fired it. The flash from the rifle hit the room with a clear brightness. He saw a huge, fierce panther dragging the dead woman toward the window. The wild animal's teeth were fixed on her throat. Then there was darkness, blacker than before. And silence. When he returned to consciousness, the sun was high, and the forest was filled with the sounds of singing birds. The body lay near the window, where the animal had left it when frightened away by the light and sound of the rifle. The clothing was ruined. The long hair was in disorder. The arms and legs lay in a careless way, and a pool of blood flowed from the horribly torn throat. The ribbon he had used to tie the wrists was broken. The hands were tightly closed, and between the teeth was a piece of the animal's ear.
Now we have to say goodbye. We'll return tomorrow, same time, same place. Hope you do too. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.